Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is How to Murder Time, a podcast about games and things.
Hello everybody.
Watcher.
We're back.
We are.
Another week's gone.
Well, most of the week, yeah. A bit late recording the last one, but we're all good to go now.
Excellent.
Yes.
So, do you want to start with
talk about PlanetSide 2, as I'm often want to do.
When are you guys going to burn out of that?
I don't know. I worry that because we're playing quite so much of it, it's going to burn out all that much quicker. But no real signs of it just yet, so that's quite good, quite encouraging.
Excellent.
We're looking forward to game update 4. I don't think that's dropped just yet, or it might have by the time you listen to this anyway. I'm hoping for a new island. I think they're talking about the virtual reality training range and stuff, which is...
which has been suspiciously missing.
Yes, and hotly anticipated as well. It would just be nice to have somewhere quiet to go with a gun to test out bloom and distance and ranges and stuff. A few simple targets to shoot at instead of shooting each other in the warp gate spawn room all the bloody time.
Is that a good idea?
Puts me on edge. Well, you can't do any damage inside the warp gate bubble. So as a sort of anti-griefing measure. But I'll tell you what they do need to make is they need to make vehicles physically not have a presence whilst in the warp gate, because the number of blinking galaxies and liberators we've had flipped by bored scythe pilots. Once you land a galaxy upside down, it is basically gone. It's very difficult to flip it back onto its landing skids again. And of course, as soon as the driver gets out of a galaxy that's in that situation, it automatically instantly explodes.
Excellent.
And yes,
how can you use that for evil?
Well, you just get these friends of humanity flying around in the warp gate, and I imagine the TR and the NC have similar troubles on some days as well, and they'll just use the Empire-specific fighter to just sort of scoot around trying to flip friendly liberators and galaxies, which renders them inoperative, which burns up 15 minutes of cooldown on getting another one and uses up about 300 aerospace resource, so well done there. I don't know if it's reporting these people helps or not, but some of our lot have been, and hopefully they've been getting warnings and things. But, you know, they've taken the step of making sure that no damage can be done in the warp gate, but you can still severely bugger about with people's gameplay if you've got a mind to. Yes, but we're not letting that get us down. We've been using the galaxy quite a lot. We've been doing galaxy patrols. This is one of our new tactics, what with me being a tactical command strategist and things. It's basically the idea that Vanu are often quite low population on our server, so what we do is try and get to places faster and cover the distance quicker and make ourselves available to be where we're needed on a much more rapid and responsive basis. So the way you do that, particularly on Amarish, we're finding, is to do it with the galaxy. And what we're doing is basically working through the squad list. I usually go first because I've pimped the galaxy a fair bit, put some bits and pieces on it, armour, extra jet thrusters and so on. And we're just basically recalling to the warp gate each time we're wiped out, and then redeploying to the next target using a massive air transport that can just go straight over mountains and not have to worry about zigzaggy roads or tanks or anything.
Okay.
And then dropping on the target, galaxy pilot scoots back to the warp gate ready for the next reload. I mean, you can always respawn at the warp gate, and the travel time with the galaxy is pretty low as well, so it can be as quick to respawn and come back in force and drop on top of the point than respawn at a sunder a half a mile away and run across the open terrain. So we've been doing that and trying to keep quite reactive as well, trying to drop on peripheral fights that are going on. Sometimes we'll end up in main push Zergs as well. But what the clever thing is that once my galaxy's blown up, and often it is, next person down in the squad list goes and gets one, and we designate the driver working down through that list. That way, your 15-minute galaxy cooldown timer, well, by the time you've gone through the entire squad and each person's got a galaxy, you're probably ready to go again on your second one.
Bonus. Wow, you're losing fast, don't you?
We don't lose them that fast. I mean, you know, a worst-case scenario would be 5 minutes from warp gate to being completely destroyed and wiped out at wherever we were going. So if you got a squad of more than three, then you can just instantly respawn back to the warp gate, saddle up another galaxy, and off we go. Also, it shares out the resource costs as well. A galaxy costs about 300 to 400 points to spawn one of, and you have a cap of 750 points anyway. Like, the points come in typically about 50 every 5 minutes or so.
Okay.
So again, you've got this sort of timer block, as it were, which can very easily be sidestepped by just delegating the responsibility through the squad by number order. Mm. It means that the entire five-round rapid of having goes at flying galaxies and having to do that difficult pickup and the extraction routine, which is takes a bit of practice, it has to be said. But we're helpful chaps. We're standing on the ground, shouting on mumble, forward a bit, down a bit, that sort of thing.
It's by the tree.
Really is helpful having somebody on the ground with the metaphorical table tennis bats, because you can fly the galaxy from cockpit view, which is most half of the screen's covered in gauges and cockpit frame and stuff, and you can't really see underneath yourself. But you can fly in a fixed third person view. I think you push T while you're in it, and you can view the whole thing from behind. I almost always fly from that view, but the entire bottom half of your screen is bulked out by your plane, so again you can't see underneath you very easily, and landing on some of the sticking outy pads on biolabs or watchtowers can be quite tricky with something as big as a galaxy. So having an extra pair of eyes guiding you down onto the spot is really very useful indeed. Prevents those embarrassing flip the plane blow up moments, especially when the whole squad's waiting for you to pick them up.
Excellent.
We've been practicing with a bit of airborne pickup as well. If you can hover the galaxy about a metre or two off the ground, about 5 foot or so off the ground, that's still near enough for someone standing on the ground to look up and use E to get into the plane. So the galaxy doesn't have to actually touch down. So some of our more advanced pilots have been trying a bit of that. That hasn't gone hugely and spectacularly wrong.
People keep landing planes on them?
Well, usually if it looks like people are coming down too fast, you can usually sprint out the way in time. We have a surprisingly low casualty rate from squashes underneath galaxies and so on. There was one incident where an entire galaxy loaded up with troops went into the side of a mountain. I'm not going to name names, but I wasn't there. I was waiting on some other pickup elsewhere, and I just heard a lot of screaming on mumble, and then lots of apologetic, "Tim, do you want to get another galaxy?" Fortunately, my respawn timers are all ready to go again, so that was all right. But it's practice. It's particularly the galaxy. I find the galaxy one of the easiest planes out of the three to fly, to be honest. The size is an absolute nightmare, and the Liberator's quite hit and miss, but you put a block or two in the Precision Drops airframe. That's my cert of the week choice this time, which is the one that improves turning and braking speed, roll speed for the Galaxy. It basically just makes the whole thing a lot more manoeuvrable, more lighter on its own axis, rolling around and so on. That takes the slot that you could also put top maximum speed and acceleration in, but generally, the stock Galaxy has enough hit points to go from horizon to over the tower before they can whittle you down, unless they've got an ungodly amount of flak on the ground, which doesn't often happen. And the Galaxy only needs to stay alive to get over the waypoint, drop the troops. If you can get it back and round for another go, that's a bonus and help people get to the next one. But if the next person in your squad needs to go and get another one once your Galaxy's gone, and you carry on rolling through like that. You can also, I can't remember what else goes in the, I think there's one that improves the rate of climb and descent, but I'm not sure how helpful that is, to be honest. But yeah, just being able to manoeuvre, that's the thing. I mean, the most galaxies we've seen gone, yes, they get shot down by air cavalry a lot, but they're going to get shot down a lot by air cavalry, whatever you put on the thing. The Mosquitoes and Reavers and Scythes all go much faster than the stock Galaxy, so there's no way you can outrun these things, even with pimping it. So being able to land in a very small space, or being able to suddenly correct your orientation just as you're about to hit the deck, that's quite useful, and the airframe, the Precision Drops airframe is useful for that one. So that's something I want to rank up to quite high, actually. I'm going to save up some points. My other big pick of the week is the Solstice SF underbarrel smoke grenade launcher. You heard me talking about the underbarrel normal grenade launcher a lot. I get so many calls. Oh, we were in this biolab the other day, and I don't know what was wrong with the invading TR. They just had no idea about the one-way force field in the spawn room. So I was just stood there, silhouetted in this glowing green force field, and they're all shooting at me, standing in front of it, and I'm just stood on my ammo box, infinitely resupplying my underslung grenades, and just pelting these grenades out in sort of one every second or so, and just catching people in the face, getting insta-killed. I went from about 0.4 KD to 1.2 in the space of about 5 minutes before they managed to flip the actual base. Just don't stand near the outgoing force fields of an enemy spawn room, people.
They're there for a reason.
It will get you killed.
To stop you being there.
They're there to give the defenders an advantage, which I will abuse. I mean, they're anti-spawn camp. You can just be a bit further back, round one corner or whatever. Wait for the guy to leave the force field, then shoot him. Don't try and shoot him through a force field that is impenetrable, even if you're bored. Oh dear, I was so padding my kill rank out with that lately. It's been quite embarrassing, to be honest. But yes, I've decided to try the other gubbins that go on the bottom of the Solstice SF. These will infinitely resupply in a similar manner to the normal grenade launcher, the smoke grenade launcher. I've been firing a few. I haven't really tried it in anger yet, but I've tried firing it around the spawn room quite a lot, which is hilarious.
Does that annoy people?
It does a bit, but they can't see anything. They can't see me, so that's all right. They can't see who's doing it. Basically, you punt one out, and it will basically create a visually impenetrable cloud of smoke, which is about 10 meters across, roughly, in sort of a roughly sort of spherical shape. And you can belt these, that it persists for about 5 or 6 seconds or so.
Okay.
So you can belt a fair few of these out in quick succession if you're standing on your ammo box or whatever. And yes, it basically just means you can't see in on and they can't see out, or vice versa. So trying to work out the best ways to use that.
It must be handy when you're trying to take a corridor or something.
Well, you bung a load of those through the doorway before you charge in. But the clever bit, I also got the infrared scope.
Ah, so you don't care about it.
Yes, when you put it, it's only a one-time scope. It doesn't actually zoom anything, but you it will basically put it up into aim mode, and you get this rectangle of see through the smoke, white and black vision. Which, so basically, pelt the room full of smoke grenades, and then go in with that raised up. You can see them and shoot them, and they can't see you. That's the plan anyway.
How often does that work?
I don't know. I haven't tried it yet.
Because I would imagine with, say, full automatic weapons, a spread would.
Well, yeah, if you don't know what's in there, but you're wasting ammo. And if you,
oh, no, they're going to shoot you back.
Yeah, but you could otherwise concentrate on the person if you can see them, if you don't know where they are. I haven't seen it done an awful lot in the field. I'm guessing that just the raw killing power of the under-barrel normal grenade launcher is preferable. But I wonder how interesting it will be to just start flinging smoke grenades into a hectic Zerg or melee in a tense battle. I think the thing there is that everyone, certainly in your squad and ideally on your side, needs to know it's happening and have the infrared scope equipped and ready. So that might be something I'll try and convince 5 round rapids to do. The infrared scope for any weapon at all is only about 30 certs, so we should better get everyone with their main gun with an IR scope option, and we'll see if flinging smoke everywhere into these places helps or not.
It should do.
Might be. Well, it's I've got a nasty feeling it's going to be a bit of a double-edged sword, though. we're just going to be confused and not have any idea what's going on either.
But yeah, but that's your normal state.
That's not a normal state, yeah. But yeah, and I'm wondering how useful that will be in a farming the spawn room situation. Yes, I won't be getting huge amounts of kills because these things don't do any damage, but if I can just absolutely shroud the spawn building in smoke, maybe some of our people can get out without being... Yeah. Quite so heavily ganked. I don't know. It's a tool that's there, and it does intrigue me. I mean, there was no real smoke grenades in the first game. There was plasma grenades, which did sort of burst AOE burn damage. But
the engine couldn't really take smoke in the first one.
The invisibility thing was there with the cloaking suit and the dark light implant, but actual smoke, yeah, I imagine the engine would have had trouble with it. There were dust storms in the first game. There was actual large-scale weather visibility problems. The dust storms would move around various continents, giant circles on the map. And that would drop visibility because of storms, because of particles of brown everywhere. So, I don't know. I'm looking forward to trying that anyway. Well, I'm thinking of trying to get something going with lightnings and a resupply sunderer as a sort of armoured column concept.
Okay.
I think there was a piece on the Metanicom about how to do that, and I was looking that through, and it looked pretty sound, looked pretty solid. You get about 8 or so lightnings, any old gear will do, moving as a pack, and then you have an engineer with a rearming sunderer, probably with the anti-air turrets on the top, and one lightning with a Skyguard attachment on there, and we've got one of those as well. Akeley there likes his Skyguard. And they basically hide behind the nearest rock or back around the corner of the road or whatever, and your eight tanks go out firing, coordinating using voice chat, firing on the same targets and stuff. When you lose one or two, everyone else pulls back around to the rearming thing, gets repaired by engineers and so on, and just keep doing sorties like that. Yeah, I suppose it depends how many tanks they send back at you as to whether it'll get overrun or not, but hopefully with the Skyguard and the two anti-air turrets on the Sunderer, that we shouldn't have too much trouble with rocket spam from on high. I don't know, that's something I want to try out. We'll see how we go, but I'm really sort of liking the galaxy, just keeping the rotating galaxy operation going, because that really does help us extend our range and capabilities.
Yes.
Which is important when you've got typically a 26-28% population on our server. I don't know what the problem with the VANU is there. I've explored that a bit already, but there's no point complaining about it. That's how it is. We've got to make those 28% move further, go faster, get things done quicker. That way the larger forces coming against us, they'll get bogged down into sort of brutal melee zerging, and that will slow them down if we can have more of a manoeuvrability advantage, which is supposed to be the big Vanu concept bonus thing. You know, the TR have high rate of fire, the NC have large per shot damage, and the Vanu are supposed to have this versatility motif going with like hover tanks and that kind of thing, energy weapons. But we'll see. It's good stuff, though. Good times. We've still got quite a lot of interest in there. Actually, I'm getting full squads quite a lot of the
time.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, it just helps getting stuff done, and we are actually getting stuff done. That's the thing. We're making a difference. It's remarkable. You know, we're just a bunch of bumbling amateurs mostly. We're just there mostly for a giggle and for the social side of it all. But just applying 10 people to one base or one problem does start to significantly. Well, either you'll steamroller over a lightly defended base, even you know us with our quite low KD ratios and stuff, or we'll start to shift the balance a bit in something larger and entrenched. 10 people is a significant number, even if there's like 100 people there, you know, us lot turning up and helping one side or the other.
Even if you're helping just by turning up and absorbing bullets.
Or just the morale, looking around the map and seeing lots of friendly arrowheads on it, that's always good. So you know you're not alone, you can rely on people to watch your back a bit, even if they're not even in the same squad, so... But yeah, it's definitely about making the most of the 28% that we have, I think, is going forward, is the thing to do. See, what else have I played? I've played Final Fantasy 13 2, which I bought in a sale because I quite liked the first one, mostly because I'm something of a masochist.
Oh, yeah.
That 60-hour corridor with the weird paradigm-shifting boss fighting all the way through.
And you, who said you would never play a Japanese RPG.
I'm totally obsessed. I'm hooked. It's brilliant. I finished it. I've written winner there. 40 hours I've written there.
Yes. That's not bad.
Yes, you know, as a sort of expansion pack sequel, it's somewhat shorter than the first game, but I think that's largely to do with the design of it all. A lot more of what goes on in two is optional side questing, yeah, rather than one great long thing you have to do in order. I was right at the end of that and on the last boss fight, and I ran out of time or something and had to go away and do some stuff, and I put that down about a week ago, and I came back to it today. I thought, all right, let's have another go at that. And that turned out to be the last fight. Trouble is, it must be about literally half an hour, the last chain set of you can't save after this point. Boss fight after boss fight after cutscene after exposition after boss fight. And it just went on and on. At one point, you fight a boss who very literally... When you kill him, just gets up, his health bar goes to full, and you have to do it again exactly the same way. I just thought, my God, that's lazy. You know, he doesn't turn into a massive thing. He does turn into a massive thing afterwards for fight 7 out of the 12 in a row you have to do. But yeah, at one point he literally does just get all his health back and make you fight him again exactly the same way. I just...
Well, it's content, I guess.
It is content, yeah. It's good reuse of everything there.
That was a big win on the have we got another 10 minutes content.
How can we pad this out a bit? Just make them do it again. That'd be right. Oh, okay. Do you don't think that would be a bit transparent, do you? No. Yes. Oh, I don't know if... It's not that I don't want to spoil the end. I just think if I described it at you, dear listener, you wouldn't have a bloody clue what I was talking about. Because frankly, I've just witnessed all of the expository cutscenes and still have very little idea of what actually was going on there. It was something about prophecies and guardians and time travel, and it all ended on a bit of a downer, I have to say. I'm not going to say what happened if anyone is still plugging through that and trying to work out what the hell's going on, like I was. Yeah, a bit of a downer and a bit of a cliffhanger as well. It literally finishes with "to be continued ... and I just thought, oh Christ, another 50 hours of this coming up at some point. And so I did a little bit of research. There is, in fact, a Final Fantasy 13-3, Lightning Returns, it's called, because for some reason just the letters and numbers are getting a bit absurd, apparently. Can't see it myself. I think they might have gone with, you know, FFXXIII-2-II maybe instead, rather than, you know, rather than breaking out a whole new 3 there. I think that's a bit rash. And you know what? The worst thing about it all is that I care enough to want to actually go and do this and find out what's going on and stuff. So I'm going to be greatly anticipating Final Fantasy 13-3 when it comes out.
Do we have a release date on that?
I don't know. My research didn't go that far. I was, you know, it was about 4 in the morning and I'd just done an 8-hour boss fight. So I was a bit bleary-eyed and somewhat punchy at the point there. So I don't know. But everything's gone to hell in a hand cart, as it were. And it would be interesting to see how they're going to write their way out of what happened at the end of that one.
It always has to go wrong at the end of the second.
Yes, yes. Obviously, this was, you know, the... the first one was good. Let's do two and three back to back.
No, they always just do that.
Oh, is that a Final Fantasy thing, yeah. Is it? Okay, fair enough. But I, on the whole, it was quite a positive experience. I mean, I've talked about it on previous shows quite a bit, mechanics and so on. But on the whole, it basically takes most of the problems people had with Final Fantasy 13 and addresses them all quite brutally. So it is almost a different game, but with the same characters and world. So I think that's worth a look, certainly, considering you can get it for about £5 now on Amazon or whatever, on the platform of your choice. I was playing on an Xbox. I imagine other platforms are out there too.
Funny enough, it's on PS3.
Yeah. Yep, fair enough. Yeah, so now I've got to wait for the next one to find out what was going on. But
is the next one even going to be on this generation of consoles?
I don't know. I don't even know if they started writing it yet.
They have, yeah.
Oh, fair enough. I'll be cross if I have to buy an Xbox 720 just to find out what happens at the end of that train wreck. But I may not bother. But on the whole, quite liked it, yeah. There's a lot of leftover filling in the corners stuff to do. They do a thing at the end where you just go back in time for no obvious reason and can play all the bits from then on.
Yeah.
Including, nice touch, the very last region and area you unlock allows you to redo the introduction and tutorial. Fair enough. Which, to be fair, the introduction and tutorial are pretty awesome. They're very... A lot of the cutscene effort had gone into there. I mean, a lot of the mid-game is fairly standard, run around, do your paradigm combat against normal monsters stuff. But the beginning and the end of it are very good. So, yeah.
How does it feel to be a hardcore Japanese RPG
fan? I am
fan?
A hardcore Japanese RPG.
Although
RPG
you're playing
person,
Final Fantasy 13, so you're not.
Oh, fair enough. I don't know. Is this a bit fluffy and light, is it?
Oh, it's not the same as the others. We're going to have to get you on 7, I think.
Yeah, do let me know in comments which is the definitive Final Fantasy. I'll give it a go, but probably we'll have to look for some sort of English dub or something.
There are English versions.
Okay, fair enough.
And it's okay. 7 didn't actually have speech. It was before speech.
Oh, okay. Ah, back in the old days when you had to read stuff.
Yeah.
God, the liberties they took with the player then back then. Yeah. So I quite enjoyed that. I'd recommend it. Let's see, I've got Ingress there. Yeah, so, right, you might remember last week when me deciding that Ingress was bollocks.
Ingress is bollocks.
Well, what you have to know about me is that I like MMOs, which suggests a lot of deep psychological problems. It suggests that I have extremely strong masochistic tendencies, and also, generally, I'm not happy unless I'm unhappy.
I would just like to say, yeah? Ingress isn't an MMO, and neither is Planetside 2. Therefore, this is your first ever week without a MMO reference.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know, it all feels like an MMO to me. I tend to go in there and solo it and ignore everyone else, so you know. So I've written Ingress is trying to kill me there. Yeah, okay, so I thought, all right, let's not jump to the conclusions, let's not be hasty here, because I found I've written web maps there. I found the valuable missing piece of intelligence, which apparently you need to play the game in any meaningful fashion, which I hadn't known about previously. If you go www.ingress.com/intel, it will ask you for an Ingress login and then give you basically a modded Google Maps client, which allows you to find all the goddamn portals.
Excellent. Yes. Why is it on the phone?
I don't know. Well, it is on the phone because the phone's got a browser, but you know what I mean. I know what you mean. Yeah, exactly. I don't know.
Why isn't the browser in the game?
I don't know. There's no reason. I can't understand why the client itself isn't giving you clues as to where your nearest portals are. Maybe it is, and I'm just not seeing it properly. But so yes, with a proper zoom out to the whole country and look at the little blue and green sparkles on the map type client, it actually gets a bit more playable.
Can you indeed confirm there are portals?
I can indeed confirm there are portals. Yes, I had a good old look. The nearest one to me is about 3 miles away, which is quite a walk across open countryside.
That's not quite a walk.
Well, you've got to remember, I'm quite a sedentary potato of a gaming couch person, but I managed to find my nearest portal. I actually went out on foot, decided, because I got this bar full of XM bobbles that I've been picking up from everywhere, and it wouldn't let me use any more, so I thought, right, I've got to find and do something with these. So ended up spending most of the afternoon out on a long country walk,
which
I otherwise wouldn't have bothered doing. This is how pathetic I am. It takes some weird ARG thing to get me off my flat and walking, and my legs feel quite stronger again, and everything. It's starting to get some inkling of how atrophied my body has become. So yes, I've been tricked into doing exercise again. I did find a portal. It was in a church in a village about 3 miles away. So there I am, wandering around the graveyard, staring at a smartphone. Yes,
I don't think people complain about that.
I know. If I had a story ready, I'm visiting the grave of an ancient relative whom I miss and dearly departed and things. I don't know. Yeah, they're going to have to come up with increasingly elaborate cover stories and disguises and stuff, you know, to get into some of these places. The problem with the portals is a lot of... So what I don't know how portals become... I guess Google make them in some fashion, seed the map with them, but I'm seeing sometimes in places nearby where I'm going about my day-to-day life, huge clusters of this XM stuff, but no actual portal there. And I'm thinking, is that because no one's found a portal at that place yet? And you know, these are places where I probably shouldn't be trying to go, like schools and railway lines and regional airport runways, that sort of thing.
Military academies.
Military academy, yeah, that was a good one. And hospitals, you know. Yeah, so they just keep... I think it's monuments. Monuments and landmarks is my thing. I've been doing a bit of research. There's a couple of them around the town centre nearest to where I am. I went out there today and had a little wander around. So you get close enough to one of these portals and the excitement begins. You tap it and then you select hack portal and it'll do a little bit of a thing. It'll cost you some of your little XM and you'll get some stuff.
Excellent.
You get resonators, which are the things you reinforce portals with to make them more awesome and things that you claim them. But also resonators are the things you need to destroy if you're going to wreck someone else's portal, one of the evil blue team, who apparently are about 80% in control of the world. So I've done my usual thing there.
Yep.
Go me. Hello, who are the underdogs here? I've come to slow you down even more. So the green team, yes, it's good. My local town seems to be full of green portals, though, which is good. So apparently I live in a bastion of my own team, which was fortuitous, considering it was literally flip a coin to decide which side to pick at the start of it all. So once you hack the portal, you get some items. I got some resonators. I got some XMP bursters. These Ooh. Are like your attack thingies. You stand near a portal and you use one of those, and it damages all the resonators around it. When all the resonators are down from 100% to zero, you can presumably destroy and then reclaim and set up your own portal on the ruins of the previous portal or something. You can also use your XM to recharge existing resonators for if it's a friendly portal. The resonators decay over time.
They need some
like 10% a day or something. So yeah, you need people wandering past. But the thing is, the portals also seem to generate huge clouds of the bobbly XM stuff all around them if they're left alone for any small amount of time, which means that realistically you just need to go there and push recharge. It will use the stuff that's on the ground near it and use that to recharge its own stuff on the resonators. Then, presumably, if you know what you're doing, there's something you can do with portal keys. I got one of those. I'm not quite sure what to do with it yet.
Open a portal.
I need to go... open a portal to the Gozerian dimension. I need to work out what to do with those, but apparently you can link portals together, but it's that creates green or blue lines across the map. And then three of those makes a triangle, and under that area is a control field, and so on. And you earn XP for doing this, AP they call it. I'm still only halfway through level one. I don't really know what that even means in any context.
Not a lot.
But it is quite interesting sort of just wandering around places that you normally go. Once you've found out where they bloody are, you know, like your nearest town, or go out for a walk or something. And I just see it as, I don't know, maybe I am so pathetic that I can't just go out and do exercise on my own. Maybe I need some stupid Skinner box to power it all. But I've done a lot more walking this weekend than I've done in the whole previous month, I think. So I think it's probably a good thing for my health, if nothing else. But I'm just worrying about the constant being sent into private land and military installations and stuff to collect bobbles and
whatnot. I think that's just the unfortunate side effect of their mechanism
it's
for choosing.
It's got to be a highly automated system. They can't have come round and looked at individual places, particularly the XM, which I'm guessing... I don't know, the same cluster densities of the stuff keeps appearing in the same places after I harvested it each time, so I suspect that XM generation is on a layer of some sort and fixed. You can go to the same place to find the same amounts of this
it's
stuff.
It's going to be using Google to just generate a list of where the landmarks are, and unfortunately a lot of them are private property.
There's some sort of historical landmark database. I saw some talk of how to, where to go looking for portals and so on, and apparently there is a sort of historical monuments or historical markers.org or something. They're basically some massive database they've just imported and used as their portals. There's a mechanism, I think you need a different client, where you can suggest new portals. You take a little photo of a thing and tell them to give it the coordinates, and they'll consider it, and within 2 or 3 weeks that may show up as a portal. I didn't really look into that stuff that well. I'm wondering if that's part of the beta or something else again. But yes, so I went out on a big old country drive today, and I found quite a few portals in places I wouldn't expect, but also a lot of the place where I live where there is just no mobile phone coverage. Yeah, which is a problem. You look at this ingress intel map, and there's huge tracts of countryside where there are no portals, nothing. But the thing you've got to do is you have to zoom all the way in, because of the different level of zoom you've got. If you're zoomed right out, it'll only show level 8 portals, and the more you zoom in, then the lower level portals will start to show up. And to see unclaimed portals, you've got to be zoomed in almost to the level that you get on the Android client itself anyway. So I'm finding myself curiously addicted to it a bit, which is annoying, because I didn't want to like it because I thought it was stupid, but now I'm doing it a lot.
Doesn't stop it being stupid.
Fair enough. How are you getting on with your Shadow City thing?
It's still bollocks.
You haven't had a similar revelation. Fair enough.
No, it's got nothing to it. You put stuff up, harvest stuff. Nobody seems to attack your stuff. You can't be. Well, I can't rude. Attack anyone else's stuff. Because I've got enough of my own
stuff.
There
seems to be a fair degree of organisation going on in Ingress.
There's a chat and there's people organising.
There's a little chat. There's a chat tab on the client, which you can slide to different ranges and set to faction only. And it's not so much live chat. It's more of a little ongoing notice board. So you'll see. So if you're in a particular place and you zoom into the 20km, you'll see all the last couple of things anyone said in that region on that team. You know, without having to be there and wait for someone to speak, it'll just log it all. And I think some of the people in my larger sort of 200, you know, the sort of 200km area, I think there's some degree of organisation using Google Plus to set up groups and people, there's like rotors to go and recharge particular portals and stuff. You know, I think some of these people are taking this stuff quite seriously.
Far too seriously.
Well, I think you probably do need to organise a bit to get anything meaningful done, because the amount of grinding out, finding bobbles of XM to power everything and working on portals, increasing them, paying power and so on. And the level of the portal determines how long the line you can use to connect the next portal, so which is the cornerstone of building your control field. So a level 1 portal is only capable of linking to 160 metres away.
That's not very useful.
That's not terribly useful, no, considering I'm not sure I've seen portals that close to each other. So you have to grow it up and develop it, and that takes resources and a bit and input of XM from more than one person if you want to get anything done. I mean, if some enemy person comes along and starts dismantling it all in the middle of the night or whatever, then you'll get nowhere. But a level 8 portal can connect up to 160 kilometres away, which is a bit more realistic, a bit more useful. But it takes a lot of time and energy, because remember, these things are decaying all the time as well. So there's a certain degree of maintaining these things. And I'm wondering if... See, I'm mostly fascinated to find new portals. You know, large clumps of XM, which I'm wondering, is that possibly a portal there? Where do these portals come from in the first place? I'm trying to sort of get them in on that side of it all, rather than sort of pitching in on a big attempt to dominate a particular region and go through what sounds very similar to EVE Online POS maintenance.
Ah, that's fun.
But in the real world, you have to actually walk to these places, push a couple of buttons, then go home, you know, once every 24 hours or whatever. I'm wondering how bothered I can be to do that kind of thing, certainly. But just the initial sort of striking new ground and the pioneering side of it, if it exists at all. I don't know. I'd have to do a lot more research, find out if I'm just wasting my time trying to find new portals, whether they're already all out there and known, or whether new ones can at this stage be created or added in some fashion.
It's possible that it's completely out of your hands.
Mm. Yeah, my worry is that that's all done at Google's end, and that's it, really. I mean, I'd have to do a bit more research. But yeah, just a reason to go out on a sort of, you know, half-hour walk, you know, or an hour or two walking around the countryside where I live of a weekend. Not a bad thing.
I still think geocaching is a bit more fun.
I don't like the grubbing around in the hedges. You don't have to do that with this. You just have to stand there looking shifty with mobile phones in primary schools, you know.
Yes. At least with geocaching, they tend not to put them in dodgy places.
Well, quite, yeah. I think, as you say, I think it's largely accidental, but I'm just quite surprised at how actively Ingress is trying to get me in trouble. Keeps suggesting things for me to do, telling me to go places. Keeps egging me on.
Do not trust it.
I know, I'm going to end up in prison.
You are.
Literally, I'll be climbing over the fence trying to get to a portal. Yeah, so yes, Ingress is trying to kill me, but it's an interesting way to die, I think, probably. So what have you been up to?
I have.
Pretty much it for me.
I actually played a couple of games.
Okay.
I will get to the good game in a bit.
I will first mention I played Simpsons Tapped Out.
Simpsons Tapped Out?
Which is another one of those iPhone calculator games.
Okie dokie.
Branded as The Simpsons.
Ah, right.
With really, really low quality samples of voices.
Oh, dear. It's a bit shovelware, is it?
No, it looks really good. And it actually plays better than a lot of them.
Okay.
It starts off with a joke Homer makes playing one of these games, saying that he's just bought $1,000 worth of currency and he'll blame it on the kid. which I thought was a little weird, considering it then gives you the opportunity to do
the same thing. It's all sounding very ironical and meta right from the word go then, yeah.
But it seems to be one of the better examples of these games, because it's not very punishing when it comes to having to spend money. The land expansions are for cash that you can earn in-game.
Okay.
All the buildings except the special ones.
Yeah, dual achievement system there, then that's good.
Yeah, so it's not like the ones where the cities one I was playing, where you to do an awful lot, you actually have to buy real stuff. Because any land expansion, you have to buy these tickets, which cost a small fortune, and you start pricing them up and you realize, oh, to do that's going to cost a tenner. Screw this, I'm not playing this game. It's dumb. But the Simpsons one seems to work, and it's quite fun.
Is the actual gameplay interesting? This is always the problem, isn't it? Does the game exist purely to give you opportunities to spend more money? Or is the game itself fun and can be helped by spending money?
The game at the moment is basically a exercise in nostalgia.
Okay.
You unlock, as you go along each level, a building or two from Springfield. The point is, Springfield is destroyed and you're trying to rebuild it.
Right, got you.
And so you put down the Simpsons house first, then you build up and get the school and stuff, and characters start coming in.
How many buildings can you name from The Simpsons, though?
Then
you ever go to about four of them.
Yeah, but there's a lot from other episodes.
Oh, fair enough.
So it's currently the St. Patrick's Day event going on. So the special building they've added for that is the Irish bar that. From in Ireland when they went over. So there's stuff from individual episodes. So, yeah, it's interesting. I don't know how long I'll keep up at it, and I don't know
if, how long you meant to keep it.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll ever give them any money or anything, but it's already at the stage where buildings take 24 hours to build, and that's a dangerous tipping point for me.
Well, yeah, because depends how patient you are, that sort of thing, or how much you care at all.
Because it gets to the point where if I don't have to check it for 24 hours, I don't bother. Then it sends me a message saying, come back and play. And I think, oh, screw you.
Yeah. That's the first thing.
You're not the boss of me.
One of the first things that sends me spiraling away from a game is a nasty email saying I haven't logged in a while. Right. Uninstall.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know what the longevity is. I don't know what what you can laugh at me call the end game on these things is.
Yeah. Handheld device end game. That's not something you'd really hear a topic of, really.
Yeah, but you unlock new people when you get the houses or the buildings, and then it has a small arc of missions for them. And yeah, it's interesting. Not great, but interesting.
I've seen that in the Google Play Store for Android, so I guess that's on mine. I might have a look.
Yeah, it's an interesting little game. It does do that horrible thing that you installed it, then it wants to download 200 meg of updates.
Yeah. Quality control.
I thought you weren't allowed to do that on the iPhone. The thing is, they keep pushing out new buildings and stuff. So often you'll start it and it'll download a couple more mega buildings.
Not so much bugs as just more content going in. Okay.
Yeah, because if it was bugs, it would re-download the client. So I think just because it's been out for a while, there's 200 megs worth of content that added since launch.
Oh, fair enough.
Which, you know, could maybe put into the main client. But yeah, it's... it's one of the better examples, and the presentation's really good. The art style is spot on, as you'd expect.
It's a good high quality example of the genre.
It's an EA game, so it's got Origin built in.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Which is really useful, because I've got no friends on that. And one of the first missions is, connect with a friend. I have no friends, okay.
Certainly no friends who use Origin.
Yeah. So if anyone's playing this game and wants to be friends, give me a shout. You get bonuses. You got 5-star in all the different categories for your town.
Oh, yeah.
And one of them is for having friends.
So. Oh.
I've got the tree hugger one because you put down enough trees. That's fine.
My achievement list demands friendships. Contact me.
And the average of, I think it's like 6 or 8 different categories, and the average of them from 0 to 5 all together. So I'm currently 3.5. That gives you a 3.5 times bonus on all your XP and cash you earn.
Ah, right.
Which is interesting.
So what do friends make?
More prizes.
Exploitable resources.
A tiny amount of exploitable resources. In the grand scheme of things, nothing.
Mm. Everybody dies in the end.
Yeah. It's free to play, of course, and you can pay for donuts.
Right.
Which is the currency.
Donuts. Yeah. Okay.
But you probably don't need to.
Like it.
Next, SimCity.
Oh, it's been a fantastic week on Twitter.
SimCity apparently launched.
This has been brilliant. I've no interest in the game whatsoever. As far as I'm concerned, SimCity 2000 is enough city for me. And I just hadn't really thought about buying another one ever since. But this is a new one with lots of social and lots of DRM and lots of fantastic online activatable save game.
I believe
stuff.
It has train wrecks.
Train wrecks. It is a train wreck. EA Train Wreck Simulator 2013. Wow, where did it all start to go wrong?
So there I was, reading all these articles on SimCity and how badly it was going and looking at my Twitter
stream.
And
you just thought you had to play that, didn't you?
Yeah.
You just saw you saw the entire internet rise up and revolt against this one particular game, and you thought, you know what, I want to play that to see what the fuss is about.
Unfortunately, I can't. Uh-huh. So I had to look for a compatible SimCity with what I had next to me, which happened to be my iPad.
Okay, what?
So I grabbed SimCity on the iPad.
Okay, is that a different thing then?
Yes.
Okay.
But it was brought about because of there being the new SimCity. So I grabbed my iPad.
Yeah.
And
he's holding on to it right
I'm
now.
I'm starting it now.
Look at those thumbs go.
There is on the iPad a copy of SimCity Deluxe.
SimCity Deluxe. Presumably this is a different model of SimCity from the thing that everyone's going on about.
Yes, it's a much more traditional SimCity.
Mm-hmm.
In as far as... It's on a much smaller scale than... Oh, no.
No.
The new one's on a really smaller scale.
More Sim Village, really.
So it's a classic isometric job.
Yeah.
With all the zoning and whatnot.
That does look very similar to SimCity 2000.
It does.
The engine
And it's got the water layer and stuff.
Yeah.
With all the pipes.
Optimised for a pad.
Yeah, and it's optimised for a pad. It's touchscreen, which is brilliant. Or the new one's touchscreen as well.
Mm-hmm.
And what it's reminded me is, actually, SimCity gets really boring really fast.
The game isn't any that
there's
any good
not
anyway.
Enough to do in it.
Like it's
your zone stuff and
stuff. It's about setting up conditions and a model and a simulation, if you will, and letting it run and observing what happens. It's about sort of setting up conditions and seeing the results rather than being actively engaged in the same way a first-person shooter is, for example.
Yeah, but...
So if that doesn't float your boat, then, well, fair enough.
It's... Yeah, I used to play for hours on these games, and now it's just not enough. That I think I need to tap buildings or something.
Why can't I tap these buildings to gain coins? Yeah, I see.
One thing
is SimCity as a concept outdated then? Has its time come and gone? Is this whole retro, SimCity 5, is that all a bad idea?
No, I don't think so. I think
with?
There's still stuff there. It's just the older ones are a bit boring because it's purely... isometric laying out maps, drawing stuff, waiting for stuff to fill in. And it comes down to a very, very simple equation of what resources you need.
Mm-hmm.
And
there'll be ratios. Yeah, you'll need X of this, Y of that, and so on. And you build it up in modular blocks, essentially. Once you've got the basic sort of ratios between the basic components sort of worked out, you can expand that and scale it up and down. And that's basically it, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Although I've always found it quite challenging dealing with the money side of it all. I mean, you know, have you planned ahead for when your first power station explodes? That was always the big problem.
Well, that's true, and I don't know if they do in this. I assume they do, but I can't get it.
The coal station lasts 50 years, and if you forget about that, you could suddenly end up in 50 years' time with no money and a bill of many thousands to get electricity back.
So
you're sort of planning a bit and setting up the system and so on.
I think what it doesn't have is any way of unlocking special things later on.
SimCity 2000 did have that. There were a whole set of civic buildings you got granted when your population reached certain sizes. There's like an opera house and an Eiffel Tower and stuff. It depended on which version.
And this version doesn't seem to.
Mm, fair enough.
But it does remind me that... these games are still going on, like there's that Cities...
Cities XL, Cities Live.
Yeah, and there are all these, and they've all been moving on. And I really should actually take a look at this new SimCity once the patch to crack it has come out.
I loved the Steam sale they had going there. which is basically six of Steam's current city building games half price until the servers start come back up for SimCity 5.
Yeah, that's
brilliant. how about that to stick the boot in? Why don't you? Yeah, and Tropico was one of those. I think they had Cities XL and a couple of other bits and pieces as well, all similar sorts of game.
Yes, I think I'd rather play Tropico.
Yeah.
Tropico is just a bit more fun. It's a bit
more lively, a bit more humorous.
A bit more lively and has more of a task-based thing rather than just get on with it, basically.
Well, there's place for a free-form sandbox, certainly.
It just feels like a more modern gamey type.
What do you think of the social stuff in the new SimCity?
I think it's almost totally a waste of time at the moment.
As far as I can see, it works in regions and you and three other players have to distribute a lot of the higher-end stuff between you because the cities don't get that big. Things like your mate next door need... If you let your mate next door set up the education system, you can benefit from it, and then you can provide some other service back in return.
I think it works.
Trying to sort of grow it as regions.
It works if you've got two real mates to do it with.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
if you don't...
I did see one review where they pointed out that this system was an absolute paradise for griefing, and not in the usual ways as well. You grief by letting your city just really languish and run down, and it drags the neighbouring cities down with it, apparently, which is quite bad. Also, the save games aren't local.
No, they're on servers, and apparently you're lucky if it's still there when you come back.
Server reliability and all that. I mean, I don't want to launch off into the old DRM thing as usual.
It's not about DRM.
It's not really about DRM, no.
It's about the whole, let's turn this single-player experience into a multiplayer experience without there being a single-player experience.
Yeah. Essentially, the game doesn't need all of the social and multiplayer... Well, perhaps they felt it did, and perhaps they're trying something new.
It's good that it's there, but it should still have a single-player one. There's some stupid bollocks they've said about, oh, no, it needs the service because the processing's done on them.
Well, it needs
great.
The service because all PC gamers are thieves. Fact. And we can't sell PC games unless it's got always on DRM. So they need to justify it with a load of other stuff as well. But it's not the problem that they feel they need to do that. It's the problem that they can't maintain that physically.
Well, everyone knew it was going to go wrong.
Yeah. I mean, if this stuff wouldn't be quite such a you know, up in arms outrage if every time they launched one of these, it didn't do this.
I don't think anyone's managed to
lay
launch
on enough
a
capacity.
Big thing where it's not fallen over.
Oh, well. Yeah.
It seems a shame.
Well, I'm just not that interested in it, really. I've got a SimCity 2000 somewhere still, and I think it runs with DOSBox or whatever.
I'm going to keep playing Tropico.
Tropico 3, yeah. I still haven't got significantly far into that yet, so.
Let's play 4. But yeah, so it got me back in SimCity briefly. But
a different SimCity anyway.
But a completely different SimCity altogether.
Fair enough.
Next, let's talk about the game I played that I liked.
Okay. Oh, you liked a game?
I did. I liked a game so much I completed it.
This is going to be brilliant.
Tomb Raider came out.
Tomb Raider. Okay.
So I grabbed that on the Xbox.
Because I know this was a sort of big attempt to reinvent and reboot Lara Croft's sort of legacy a bit.
Yeah.
I didn't really know much more about it. I do remember the very early Tomb Raider games, the first one or two, that I did quite enjoy. Not so much because of the cartoon feminized, you know, the big breasts and everything. It's more that it was a fantastic puzzler.
Yes.
Really good 3D platformer, which you just didn't have very many of back in those days.
This isn't so much that anymore.
You sort of lost a lot of the block moving and the trying to find your way up into complex structures.
There's a lot of trying to find your way up not so complex structures, and there's not that much block moving. Mm. There's an awful lot of using an arrow with a rope tied to it to move around, swinging things to do stuff.
Sort of grapnel gun type gameplay.
Working out that you need to open certain shutters when it's really windy to move a block over a area you want to smash through so you can knock it down. So there's some of it.
Yeah.
And a couple of times I actually did get a little bit stuck.
Oh.
But I wouldn't say
that's actually a good sign, yeah.
I wouldn't say it's the main gameplay. You can play most of it just as a sneak 'em up.
Mm-hmm.
We're ignoring that because there's these optional tombs along the way, which is where that content is.
Oh, and only a sort of challenge room type of thing.
And only a couple of places where you actually have to do this in the main storyline, which is an interesting choice and probably a good one.
So if you want to play it as just a sort of third-person story romp, then you can go blast straight through the main story.
Or if you want to play it as a running and gunning, you can, although the gunplay is not that great. Because it's not meant to be.
Right.
It's a really good game that's taken what was a laughable franchise towards the end.
It got a bit self-parodying towards the end, yeah.
Well, it got self-parodying after the first one was successful, when stuff like having... very, very badly created polygon characters on the front of men's magazines.
God, yeah.
I'm sorry, no. But what they've done is they've taken Lara Croft, they've managed to reinvent her, give her a good writer.
Yeah.
Which is Rihanna Pratchett.
Oh, okay.
Of the Pratchett fame, who also did Heavenly Sword and Mirror's Edge, games I both really enjoyed, and also Dungeon Keeper 2.
Overlord.
Overlord, was it? Yeah, Overlord, it was one of them. And what we've ended up with is this nice story that really works of her discovering who she is and what she wants to do with her life.
Sort of believable contemporary heroine.
Yeah. Mm. She starts off, she's a young archaeologist on an expedition to find something. It all goes a bit wrong.
Ah.
She reluctantly starts killing people and commenting that it's far too easy to do.
Ah.
And gets beaten up more and more over it, both physically and emotionally. And then...
emotional depth in a Lara Croft game.
Wow. Oh, yeah. It's something interesting.
Unexpected, yeah.
The game you have to compare it with is Uncharted.
Right.
Which has got Nathan Drake, the typical cocky jokes are all the time whenever there's a difficult situation. Nothing really phases him. Mm. And because it's voiced by Nolan North, even when he's meant to be a little bit worried, it never comes across as anything other than cocky.
Right.
But what they've got with the new Tomb Raider is a believable character who is allowed to feel that when somebody she's been with on the expedition gets killed, it's not a good thing.
Mm.
When he sacrificed himself to save her, hypothetically, she's allowed to feel bad about it. Whereas when... Nathan Drake was getting all...
just a wisecrack and off we go.
Is Sully, his lifelong friend, dead? Don't know. He doesn't seem to really care that much either. He says so, but you never quite believe it. So what they've done is... it's possibly... well, probably because she's a woman and therefore is allowed to actually have emotions.
Mm, yes.
And they're
often envious of that.
Yes, and they're not treated... like a weakness, they're a character thing.
Yeah.
And so it works really well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the game wasn't helped by a couple of PR screw-ups early on.
God.
Which, I have to say, were completely blown out of full proportion. Anyone getting up in arms, oh, no, we're going to boycott this game because it touches this subject. No, it doesn't. It does not touch that subject at all. It was some stupid developer saying something out of line.
Oh, fair enough.
But apart from that...
so you said the gunplay is not that great.
Well, it has a couple of...
can you elaborate on that?
It's a game which wants you to play it as sneaking around, taking people out from a distance. You can't really stand up in a one-to-one fight because they will shoot you, they will hit you with a stick or whatever. And it doesn't want you playing that way.
Right. So it's sort of moving toward a more realistic interpretation of gunplay.
Yeah.
Anyway, not standing there taking multiple rounds to the chest and just
ignoring. Yes, you die very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Ammo scarcity?
Ammo scarcity is not that much of a problem.
Okay.
Especially after you get a couple of the upgrades that enable you to salvage more ammo from people. Your main weapon's a bow, and one of the first things you can get is an ability that lets you reclaim your arrow from the dead body.
Oh, okay.
Which helps a lot.
Yeah.
And the bow will insta-kill nearly everyone unless they're wearing a hat.
Sounds a lot like Thief.
By going for the head, yes. It's also got a flame mode later on.
Excellent.
Where you can set itself on fire, which is good. And it's also got the tie a string to it and use it as a grapnel, which you can tie off and climb along.
Hmm.
There are other guns. There's a pistol, there's a shotgun, and a rifle. And the rifle gets a grenade launcher. And this is where it gets a bit dodgy, because there's a couple of bits in the game. There's one specifically when you're trying to run away from something, and you have to do this very Call of Duty thing, running along a street, killing everyone.
Oh, God.
And it just doesn't feel like it fits. And it took me a little while to get through. It just really didn't work.
Oh, fair enough.
And the checkpoint for it was too far back, which was really, really annoying. But I got past that, then didn't trigger the checkpoint for the next
one. So when did you get this?
Wednesday.
So right, yeah. So you've
and I was busy most of Wednesday night.
So what, we're talking like sort of 4 hours worth there?
No. I'd say there's a good 10 hours game.
Okay. It still seems short to me, but then I've just come out of a Final Fantasy game. So
just going through the plot and haven't really done a lot of the other stuff. All of the jumpy puzzly stuff is still there. There's an awful lot of collecting stuff.
Right.
There's an awful lot of hunting.
There's always the collecting.
Yeah.
The collecting never ends.
There's a couple of other points. There's a point where you're going down a river and there's instant death if you get too close to the edge, which is really annoying.
Press X not to die.
But for the rest of the time, it is an outstandingly good game.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it. It's got a believable character for a change in one of these games, which, you know, you just don't usually get. it got actually a character you care about enough that you don't. The problem I had with the original Tomb Raider was it was always a lot more fun to throw her off cliffs than see how far she could fall and die.
Right. And have you found yourself wanting to do that?
No,
here?
Not at all in this one.
Ah, right. There we go.
Which is
so you've made a lot of progress in the last 15 years.
I think it's just games made a lot of progress.
Fair enough.
Everyone used to do that.
Mm.
But it's just, it's a reboot of a game which has worked.
Okay, so recommendation then?
Yes, definitely.
Good stuff.
I can't think of that many games that were rebooted that have worked.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah. Something that happens with films more, really.
Fallout did.
Yes, yes. I think Bethesda did a good job there. I'm playing Fallout 3 again at the moment, actually. I just fired that all up because excellent. I saw Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome on TV.
That'll do it.
And yeah, I thought, oh, hey, I want to go post-apocalyptic. Ah, here it is. Reached down and pulled that world off a shelf.
Yeah.
That's great.
And lastly, I, for reasons which I'm not entirely sure about, mainly because it was on Sky, I watched John Carter of
John
Mars.
John Carter of Mars. Mars in brackets.
Because they took off the Of Mars. Dumb.
Right. What is that then? That's basically...
It's based on the Edgar Rice Burroughs books.
Okay.
Of this guy who...
So they took a Princess of Mars off the front because the princess sounds a bit girly, and then they took Of Mars off the end and were left with, well, we better just put John Carter in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So many people looking to see a Michael Caine sequel. Very upset there, I imagine.
Yep. It is actually based on Princess of Mars. Unlikely to get a sequel now.
Mm. So quite classic sci-fi literature.
Very classic, but it's not very well written.
I've never actually gotten around
to it. Edgar Rice Burroughs could not write.
Gutenberg, yeah. The Princess of Mars. It's Project Gutenberg's there. You can find it for free.
Yes, I got it on my Kindle by looking at the free books on that.
If you want to listen and find out or have a read through and find out what
it's worth a read. It's an interesting story. It's of its time in that wonderful way. It was before that, wasn't it?
20s, something like that.
Tens, whatever. But
back then, they actually thought Mars had canals and a breathable atmosphere and stuff. So
it's
in that context, it's not quite so...
Wonderful thing of its time. Because don't forget, it wasn't until the mid-70s when they discovered, slightly earlier in the 70s, that they discovered that Mars was actually
Mariner
completely
and
dead.
Viking, yeah.
So it just...
So what about the film?
Ah, the film. Yes. I hope you wasn't going to mention that. No, the film is fundamentally flawed in one or two ways.
Okay.
It is too silly. Doesn't make enough sense. There's an awful lot running around and there's a stupid pet that follows them around all the time.
Oh, right. Is that trying to get the younger viewers on board?
Visually, it looks quite fun. It's a lovely world. And it's sort of embarrassingly enjoyable.
Okay. So, because apparently it didn't do terribly well in the cinema.
No, it flopped mainly because I think people didn't know what it was about. Because, you know, they dropped the Of Mars of it.
Just as John Carter.
Yeah.
Fair enough. What does that mean?
Yeah, so it's worth a watch.
Okay.
It's not the next Matrix, put it that way.
Does it coincide well enough with the story, or do you not remember all that?
I can't remember enough. Story because it's really badly written to start with.
Put you on the spot a bit there, yeah. I remember starting to read
through
the story.
No, it does, with quite a lot of the story.
He's this American Civil War colonel or something who has a bit of an out-of-body coma or something.
He finds a way to be transferred over
Ends up on Mars. And swashbuckling adventures with not many clothes.
He goes over there, becomes a big hero, saves everything, marries the princess, comes back. I've spot the film now.
Spoilers.
Are you allowed to have spoilers for a century-old thing?
I think you're probably all right.
Yeah.
I think anyone who wants to see that film probably has by now anyway.
Most likely. Excellent. Yeah, it's sort of enjoyable.
What did I watch the other night? I watched The Sorcerer's Apprentice because I was in a bit of a television mood. Have you tried watching actual television? The adverts are everywhere. I don't understand why people put up with
it. I was forced to watch a little bit of Take Me Out last night.
I was watching something on ITV4 the other day, and the adverts were coming in once every sort of 6 minutes and lasting for about 3 minutes a time, and I just kept losing the plot with what was going on the thing I was watching. I can't even remember what that was now. All I remember is the adverts. And I just thought, this is stupid. Who does this? So I went off to iPlayer and just had a look in BBC iPlayer's films section. And the thing that was the least looked like the least boring and art house was The Sorcerer's Apprentice, a modern-day Disney retelling of The Sorcerer's Apprentice tale, starring Nicolas Cage as a kind of Obi-Wan Kenobi wizard figure.
That's where the film goes wrong, because it's starring Nicolas Cage.
It was bonkers, but quite an enjoyable romp.
Last good Nicolas Cage film?
Yeah?
Last good Nicolas Cage film?
Oh, that'd be The Wicker Man.
No.
I don't know. Con Air, probably.
Yeah, Con Air, I was going to say.
Face Off, not bad. Bit silly, but... Anyway, I forgot what I was talking
about. That's not Nicolas Cage.
So back over to you.
That's Thingy instead, isn't it?
Nicolas Cage and John Travolta, Face Off.
No, it's not Nicolas Cage. It's the other guy.
Was it?
Christian Slater, isn't it?
No.
Are you sure?
I don't know. I'm not going to have this argument with you here. This is boring the listener. Carry on with your talking.
You were talking.
I forgot what I was talking
about. You were
about.
Talking about...
So what have you learned this week? I call veto on this show.
I learned that you've got really bad at segues.
And I've learned that I seem to have accidentally signed up for Ingress Extreme, which seems to take place late at night with balaclavas and guard dogs and guns. So do your spiel.
Yes, you can catch us at actualmurdertime.com. And now with actual... I remember to put links to the podcast on the front page.
Oh,
so
excellent.
Subscribe. We may get subscribers now.
Oh, yeah. It's possible to subscribe now, yeah. Is it?
Without having to use your intelligence. If you go along to iTunes and leave us a review, that'd be great. Mm. If you don't want to do that, then that's fine.
Yeah,
fine.
Yeah, that's all right. That's we don't fine. Mind. No, we appreciate mind. That you're a busy person, listener. Yeah. You've got stuff to do. It's fine. Yeah, we'll be here.
It's fine.
We'll be here when you've got time, yeah. When you need us.
Yeah. You can also catch me on my other podcast, Moving On, over at Psycon.org.
Oh, what's this week's delight? You should do Sorcerer's Apprentice with Nicolas Cage in it.
Strange Days.
Oh.
See, we're going for a good film.
That is actually quite good, I remember.
Although I haven't seen it. I've seen it the first time I saw it, and I haven't seen it since.
Sort of near future thriller.
I can't remember if it's actually really good, or I just remembered it being good.
Mm-hmm.
So, we'll see about that.
Okay.
Yeah, you can get that on psycon.org/MO, I think.
There you go.
Because Brecky put some brilliant little short links for stuff.
Good stuff.
You can also on our website have a look and see where you can get hold of us in games and whatnot if you want to join us in anything. And
you can also lay out your comments in small beads of XM in your nearest supermarket or office or whatever, and I shall probably wander along and hoover them all up.
That's an awful lot of work. On the off chance you're going to be somewhere in Nebraska or
you
something.
You never know. I go by many places.
Yes. So
we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.